Hello, everyone, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, home of NARC Troopers website, where you can visit and find a whole library of articles, podcasts, YouTube videos, all other tidbits of information, and just everything you need to help you on your recovery journey, to help support you, to educate you, and to share with others, to help educate them about what's happening. I want to welcome you to Season 9. This is Episode 1 of Season 9. Snaps to everybody. Yay! Because this is almost 250 podcast episodes. If you're feeling a little lost, like some of these are beyond your level of comprehension of where you are right now on learning all this stuff, I strongly suggest that you go to my podcast channel and just start at the beginning. 250 of them, each of them ranging from 30 to 40 minutes, roughly, some a little shorter, but you can do the math to kind of try to figure out if you did one a day, you would have months and months of listening. That's 30 episodes a month. There's almost 250 of them, 360 something days in a year. Yeah, you better get busy and start listening. You know, that's not unrealistic to say that you should start at the beginning and listen to all of my podcasts, because I have evolved in the last 4.5 years since I started this enterprise, since I began this mission to educate, to inform, to get the truth out there, to support people and let them know that what's happening to them is easily explainable, perhaps not easily explainable, but that it's textbook post-narcissistic abuse suffering, and that there is a way out of all of that. So keep that in mind, troopers, that all of those resources are there, and they start out simple. I have evolved over the last 4.5 years. My understanding of what had happened in my 15-year marriage was a slow progression. Even though I had a master's degree with a focus on guidance and counseling, I did not fully have any kind of depth of understanding about narcissistic abuse. I had to specifically dive into this niche area and learn everything that I could. And special kudos to Dr. Sam Vaknin. It doesn't matter whether you like him as an individual or not, or agree with you know, who he is as a human being, but what does matter is he is an authority. He's an expert. All of his videos are rooted in research, science, and a database of thousands of narcissists that he has studied since the 90s, since the mid-90s. I think if there were any experts on this, it's got to be him. And everyone else came after. Everyone else is piggybacking on his work, myself included. And I just want to say, I listen to him every single day. And he has a larger, much larger library of material than I do. Probably thousands of lectures that are very academic, yet very much digestible and understandable. So highly recommend him. You know, if you did one of my podcasts starting at the beginning and one of his every day, I promise you, you're going to really understand what has happened to you, how to make sure it never happens again, what that person was, why they're that way, why they can't change, just the whole thing. It's going to be transformational. I tell you, it's empowering to have knowledge and understanding about all of this. For me, it saved my life. I don't think I would be here today if it were not for Dr. Vaknin, if it were not for my extensive research and my compulsion to get to the root of all of this and try to understand it. And then now my new mission to come out and tell everybody what this is and what it is not, and to help everyone understand the truth of it. So, sorry about that. That was kind of a long bunch of explanation, but it was something that needed to be said. Okay, at the 5-minute mark, here we go. Can you be healthy in an increasingly sick world? Look around. It's getting scary, isn't it? It's getting pretty scary, guys. You can hold on to sanity. Can you? Can you hold on to sanity when everything else is going crazy all the way around you? It's a good question. It's one that we should ponder. Life is tough, but I think you are tougher. And I'm proud of you for walking this road, for doing what's right. These are all things that someone should be saying to you. Okay, so I'm saying them to you. I wish I could say them directly to you so I could see you and hear you and validate you, but just take these. I'm proud of you for walking this road and for doing what's right. You are required to make big changes, and that's a really big deal. And I know things are hard right now, but I know that we will get to the other side. We have to learn how to navigate both the hills and the valleys. This is definitely a valley, but just keep going, keep going. So these words of encouragement can mean a lot to people who are losing hope and just sort of sinking into despair. People seem angry, fearful, anxious, beaten, defiant, confused, frustrated, and worse everywhere you look, and they haven't even been in relationships with people with narcissistic personality disorder, and they're still feeling that way. Is it toxic positivity to seek a silver lining or to be optimistic about a world that seems to be unraveling at a pretty rapid pace? I think it's important to remain hopeful and faithful in times of great distress. Some would say that hope is kind of a cruel thing to try to hold on to when there's no guarantee that things are going to turn out the way you want them to, but I think we have to have hope that there are things to look forward to, that there are things to enjoy, that there are ways to help and leave the world a better place than how we found it, and all of those kinds of things create hope and create a little spark within us that fuels us and keeps us going when we feel pretty beaten up, like we just can't go on. And faith, I also believe, has a role in your ability to recover from this experience that you've had with the mentally ill, disordered narcissist or psychopath. I do believe that faith and in a higher power and hope that there are things to look forward to that are in front of you, that your whole life is not just a train wreck behind you and a messy mess right now, but that there are good times ahead. I think that that's important. I think we need to have that perspective and that point of view. So my niche area of expertise is narcissistic personality disorder and recovery from relationships with people who suffer from it. I've gone through trauma intervention training, and I have, coaching certifications now that enable me to understand this in ways that I did not before. And I can say with some degree of certitude that the mental health of society in general is not doing so well right now. According to a study by John Hopkins, it says mental health disorders account for several of the top causes of disability in the United States, and they include major depression, manic depression, schizophrenia, and obsessive compulsive disorder. An estimated 26% of Americans ages 18 and older, that's about one out of every four adults, suffers from a diagnosable mental health disorder in a given year. That's from John Hopkins, and I think that's a reputable source I'm quoting here. In fact, disordered cluster B narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths, which actually antisocial personality disorder is sociopathy, And when it goes really far, well, we won't get into that, but so those are the cluster B that I'm focused on, not histrionics and borderlines, which in my opinion, even though they share some common traits and all of that, I don't think they should be classified together like that because some are treatable and some are not. A borderline can change, a histrionic can change, but a narcissist or a psychopath or a person with antisocial disorder probably cannot. And so I think that that's a pretty big distinction. I think there's a movement towards grouping all kinds of personality disorders together and calling it just a trauma response and treating it as such, as a trauma response. And you just hear that word so much. It's a little bit aggravating to hear people using it so recklessly. It feels like it diminishes it or minimizes it when everybody says they have trauma. Clearly, some people have trauma that is off the freaking charts. Unbelievable. How can you even still be alive? Kind of trauma. And other people say they have trauma when really what it was is mom liked my sister more than she liked me. Yeah, it's I don't want to diss the people who have had a pretty neurotypical experience growing up and are butthurt about certain things and they want to call it trauma, but let's use the word carefully to really describe those kinds of complex trauma or acute trauma that end up with long-term disability unless treated and aggressively having intervention. Okay, let's move on. This is going to be a little bit of longer one, so you might want to listen to this maybe in two chunks if you're used to the regular 25-minute length podcast. This one's going to go a little bit longer because there's a lot to cover. I wanted to hit the ground running. Season 9. Woo! Season 9. And I want to give you lots of information. So let's keep going. It seems like these cluster B disorder people, the narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths, are pretty much multiplying exponentially, and there's just more of them. The Handbook of Antagonism, published in 2019, says cluster B personality disorders, the ones I just mentioned, narcissism, which is NPD, sociopathy, which is ASPD, antisocial personality disorder, and psychopathy are characterized by a pervasive violation of the rights of other people, and it impacts an estimated 4% or more of the population and about 25% of the incarcerated population, 30% of domestic abusers suffer from this. 30% of domestic abusers fall into a cluster B category. That's a lot, one out of every three. And the numbers are increasing. Yep, we live in a world where the qualities of the narcissist and the antisocial and even the psychopath are almost glorified, which is very, it should be very disturbing to you, and it's scary. If you take inventory and you see narcissist here and narcissist there and narcissist everywhere, you know, maybe you're not crazy. Maybe you're not paranoid. Maybe they really are all around us. Yet the world tries to navigate without any direction because they seem lost, right? They have lost their moral compass is what they've lost. And it's increasingly apparent that we are drifting on perilous waters, stormy waters. Pods of killer whales are chasing the boats. Y'all heard about that lately? All the killer whales chasing and sinking boats. Smart, they are smart. Pirates control these waters that we're adrift in. We know who the pirates are. Bombs explode in every direction. Yep. And the people in the boat with you are ready to toss you to the sharks to lighten the load Or actually, they may decide just to eat you and to cannibalize you if it comes to that. So they are not your friends, the people in the boat with you. And even if they are your friends, they're not going to hesitate to do something bad to you if it's going to save their own hide. They're not searching for rescue. They are searching for condiments or sprinkles to put on your tasty carcass. Yes, that's right. That's an image. Think about that. There's, I, you know, that's, is that satire? What I'm joking around a little bit about something that is just so tragically, ridiculously, just horrific, but true. As they say here in California, hella scary, if you ask me. Hella scary. There are several anchors that once tethered us to the right path, but those islands of stability are disappearing. That's what Dr. Vaknin calls them, islands of stability. We are left alone in the universe to determine our course, and the consequences are catastrophic, to say the least. It's like we're not doing so well, making good choices. Am I the crazy one for hoping for a hero? Not a hero in the Marvel universe, since multi-universe sense of the word, but someone who possesses like all the virtuous and honorable traits that we seem to have misplaced. We don't even know what that is anymore. When was the last time we had a leader of the free world that was a moral and decent human being? Really? Let's see. In the pockets of corporations and lobbyists and donors for career advancement and good old greed and gluttony, misanthropic, womanizing, cheating, whoremongering, vulgarity, perversion, and adultery, criminal overreach, ruthless misappropriation of fiduciary obligations to provide every citizen with basic human dignity like shelter, housing, food, and health care. Oh, and let me qualify that. Healthy food. The cheap crap is cheap. Everybody can get that. But the healthy stuff, most people can't afford that. And of course, health care is coming apart. It's unraveling. It's not doing very well these days. It's not serving us in the ways that we would like to be served, to be kept alive and to be healthy. And the list goes on. These are our role models, the people like this. Not to mention that our two choices in the next election are like octogenarians. Is that the word for people that like most of the population in nursing homes, and yet they're gonna lead us through 4 years of clear cognitive thinking with no brain fog or dementia, and their health is gonna hold together? My gosh, these people are freaking old. And yeah, don't get me started on that. But back to my point. What about family? Family, regular Jane and average Joe, where are they? Where are they? They no longer have the tools to ground us and provide safety and direction in the storm. And I'm talking about the things that once tethered us to sanity, to virtue, to doing the right thing and having everything work the way that it needs to work. Gone, family. There is no nuclear family. Family values have not only been corrupted, they have been disposed of entirely. Who among us seeks to meet the one and the only love of their life, to raise a family with and devote the rest of their life to, and to love them, and to commit to having sex with that one person for the rest of their days till death do they part? Who does that these days? It seems like the majority of marriageable folks these days are too busy taking selfies and living their best life to worry about things like that. They don't want to commit to things like that. It might be a buzzkill. It might put a crimp in their style. It might cause them to miss out on some pleasurable something that they feel like they can't live without. I mean, come on, people. It would be quite of a downer to have a house full of screaming, smelly children when you could just be out traveling and partying and treating yourself to all kinds of little wicked indulgences. Okay, so for just forget about a relationship that is can survive the test of time. I don't see that happening. I don't see that being valued anymore, anywhere, by anybody. Relationships, they have to be fun and fast, revolving doors of new, fresh friskiness. If it doesn't serve you, then just toss it into the dumpster and find something that will. And even better, just mix it up and do a throuple or a poly arrangement, and call yourself ethically non-monogamous, even though the term itself is more akin to an oxymoron. Can you be ethical and non-monogamous? How do those go? That's like jumbo shrimp. Okay. I believe this is true. So this nuclear family is gone. It's the, after this new extreme woke faction of people and with their whole sex positive preaching, these folks just nuked it. They nuked the nuclear family. That's a fun play on words, right? They nuked the nuclear family. Sex positivity. No. Let's think about that. It's an attitude towards sexuality that regards all consensual sexual activities as fundamentally healthy and pleasurable, and it encourages sexual pleasure and experimentation, not commitment to one life partner till death do you part. But you better just get out there and get jiggy with it, and experiment and do wild and crazy things and take drugs to make it even wilder and crazier. And yeah, that's kind of what we prioritize today, isn't it? Try floating by some of this to the betrayed spouses of adulterous mates who were just pleasing themselves and pleasuring themselves and experimenting with consensually eager playmates, right? Some people these days don't care if you're married. What does that do? That doesn't mean anything. That's temporary too. So, they both agreed, let's cheat because we really, really want to, and it will feel really, really good. And so it would be really, really exciting, and we deserve it. So no worries. Let's get it on. Regardless of, this partner poaching and serial infidelity, the betrayed spouse is often persuaded to open up the marriage in order to save it. I guess that this consent involved in these compromises look like everyone's diving in with complete buy-in when studies show that in a quite a few cases, I don't have a number for you, but I'm going to say quite a few. There's one partner that's not quite as into it as the other, but who is going along with it because they don't want to lose their spouse or their boyfriend, girlfriend, or significant other or whatever. They don't want to lose that partner, so they better just shut up and put up and put out because that's what their partner wants. And oh my gosh, talk about boundaries, talk about abandoning your ethics and your morals, that's just insane. So, in my experience, people that I've known, with this were compelled by their stir crazy husbands that were ready to cheat. And in every one of these cases, they just went along to save a stagnant marriage. And the reality of these compromises tends to lean more heavily on one partner in lieu of a simultaneous urge to merge with new friends. And they've done studies around this, and people say, oh, it's made our relationship so much stronger, to go out and have extramarital affairs. And it's put some spice back into our relationship. And it's done this and it's done that. And so we just love it. And so we're going to keep having these, inviting these other people into our beds. Come on, folks. I have no words for that. It's disgusting. It's repulsive. It's nasty. It's vulgar. And this is not just a moral judgment. This is a fact. They have researched and studied people and the ones who say that, why they do it, and what kind of relationships they have that last or don't last, and the effect that that has on families and children and all of that kind of stuff. It ain't good. Don't trick yourself into thinking that it is. I just want to say I support diversity and equity 110%. And I have fought for justice and tolerance my entire life. I have championed each person's right to be treated with compassion, dignity, fairness, and equality. I am that person. I love our rich and delicious multicultural stew. While I myself was discriminated against and disenfranchised for being biracial, I'm biracial, by being female, and by being disabled. I have Stargardt, and I am, my vision is, I have low vision, it's greatly impaired. So I grieve over the way that all humans are subjugated, minimized, disregarded, vilified, exploited, and disposed of. There's no, there is no true hive mind collective endeavor to transcend the misery together. Why is this? We are slaves to the systems that are broken and blind sheeple. Talk about who's blind. I may be literally physically blind, but I'm telling you, there are millions of blind sheeple who shuffle along with the next best thing until the better thing comes along tomorrow, and they're just superficial, scattered, shallow disappointments, is what I think. This new wave of thinking is something else entirely, posing under the same umbrella, but not sharing the mic. All of the sacred institutions of marriage and family have suffered because of all of these tenets. Every day, millions are left behind, invisible, forgotten, insignificant, in a crumbling landscape of vitriol, divisiveness, and decay. Add to that all of the racial, conflagration that's happening in this country against Jewish people, anti-Semitism against African Americans, against Latinos, against Asians. I live in the Bay Area and I hear about little elderly Asian people getting jumped and beaten up or murdered when they are walking out to empty their trash. What is going on? Why do we live in a world like that? Well, maybe we're too busy trying to have a polyamorous orgy or something. Okay, so what about other institutions like the church? That used to be a anchor, a foundation, something that tethered us to our values and our morals and the things that kept us on the right track. What about the church? Where is that in all of this? Most people, of the people who still attend church regularly, have one foot in the grave, and they seem to be getting ready to meet Jesus at any moment. It's just a bunch of white-haired people that are, it's like it snowed. You look out over the congregation, and that's all that's there. Why is that? It wasn't that way, 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It was mixed. There were families, there were teenagers, there were, it was a mixed group, but these days, not so much. It was once a centerpiece of the community, a place of solace and sanity, a sanctuary away from the maddening crowd. The church has lost its luster and fails to provide modern people with what they seek. They don't like the rules, So they sure as hell aren't going to go and get up on a Sunday morning to hear somebody tell them how to follow those same rules that they refuse to follow. They don't want a lecture on how to be moral or how to be ethical, right? They don't want to hear how to be a decent person, a substantive person. They are like little kids with the, you can't tell me what to do mentality. They just don't care if it's right or if it's wrong. That those words don't mean anything to them anymore. In a world filled with so much senseless carnage and suffering, some believe the God that they once tolerated and tried so hard to appease simply abandoned us all, and that we are all on our own, alone in the universe. And then I think that, you know, some of the others have found new ideas that intrigue them, and they're preparing for ascension to the fifth dimension, or they have embraced the divine feminine, or some other metaphysical, energetic something. You know, the bottom line is that we are not unified by any common beliefs under the roof of a common gathering place, whether it's family or church or whatever, right? Because those were the places where we gained strength from the fellowship and the communion. And there's nothing that has yet replaced those community anchors. And so in situations like that, the ground is fertile for, you know what? You do know what, right? I'm going to say next. It's fertile for narcissism. And we know it's on a spectrum. You could have narcissism light. Everybody has some narcissism. I have it. You have it. Everybody has good, healthy dose of narcissistic traits. Yep. They're almost necessary. But, you know, on the far other end of it, it's pathological. It's malignant. It becomes a sickness, a disease. It becomes a incapacitating, life-altering sickness is, for lack of better words. So other systems and institutions that historically provided grounding and hope and a vision for the future are also failing. Our education system, as we have known it and trusted it in the past, it's gasping and choking for its last breath. As new agendas sweep the classrooms and replace critical thinking, rigor, character building, citizenship, independent analysis, intellectual curiosity, codes of conduct, service, mindfulness, and meritocracy, and it's replacing all of that with this canned, packaged initiative that's either too extreme right, like banning books and tampering with the curriculum, or too extreme left, like co-opting the parents' exclusive right to decide what they want to say to their child about things like gender identification and sex education and all of that. That's not the school's job. It's the parents' job. It's the parents' job. So when you have these extreme far right and extreme far left, they're killing us. They're killing us everywhere throughout the country in every way possible. Do we not see that extremism is like a plague upon us? What do we do with that? Okay, so, you know, one side just wants to give them a gun, and the other side wants to just give them a condom. And I don't think either one are appropriate. Either strictly shield them from real life choices or turn them loose to be free and do whatever floats their boat and tickles their fancy with their freak flags flying. You know, those are the choices. Those are the only choices. We got to do one or the other of these things. Between the shootings and the wildly out of control power grab for ideological gains, students don't trust the system, and neither do a lot of their parents anymore. It is another failing system that is no longer a safe haven and anchor for the community. So without all of these systems and institutions that once saved us, family, church, schools, all of that, how do we survive the challenges of war, climate, famine, pathogens, and pandemics? How do we survive economic collapse, unprecedented violence, and the acute hunger of the soul for anything to silence its prescient warnings? It's like what happens when all the anchor stores at the mall go out of business without the Sears and the JCPenney's and the Macy's and the Nordstrom's and all of those big flagship stores. The mall soon becomes, you know, it's just brought to its knees, and it either closes or transforms into a lot of satellite campuses, tiny churches, pickleball courts. I heard that malls are turning into pickleball courts. I don't get the whole pickleball thing. Come on. Talk about fads and trends here today and gone tomorrow. People are still not going to be playing pickleball 10 years from now. That's my prediction. I could be wrong, of course. But, yeah, I do kind of have a thing. I refuse to do it. I refuse. Just because it's so freaking trendy. And I'm not a trendy person to go out and get the trendy haircut and get the trendy clothes and do the trendy things and the trendy fads. No. To hell with pickleball. Anyway, if you enjoy it and get exercise from it and meet people, then that's great. It's not for this girl. So even our public libraries no longer exist as they once did. I went to the library here. I just moved from Palo Alto to closer like in Daly City, almost in San Francisco. I went to the library and asked for a library card. It was one of the first things that I did, not just because I'm some old curmudgeonly English teacher, but because libraries are important, and they no longer exist as they once did. They're sort of like places for homeless people to hang out or to have weird meetings, you know, and things like that. So our whole social design and culture is changing. We haven't even talked about the impact of AI on all of this and the coming technology and changes that is going to bring. You know, I have loved a man with narcissistic personality disorder for the better part of the last 20 years, and I can tell you something that I have learned. I have learned that their superficial They are superficial, hollow, and empty. And all of that emptiness, vacancy, has to be medicated and fed like the ravenous beast that it is, and that nothing is ever going to be enough. Nothing is ever going to be enough. And I have learned that nothing will calm the chaos within them. They will never admit any of it. They're always going to blame other people, play the victim, and present themselves to the world as its savior. Yeah, that's what they do. And you know what? Many people are going to buy it. Hook, line, and sinker. I did. I was foolish. I got played. I believed it. And, you know, I think part of me didn't. I had all those little warnings go off, all the red flags. I knew. It wasn't, I was like totally blind. No pun intended about my blindness. But, I knew something was not right. It was that whole uncanny valley is what they call it, the uncanny valley effect. Where you know with the narcissist that something is creepy, not normal, not human about these people. It's just weird. You feel it, but, you know, what do you do? We're suckers for it. We it's like we want to believe it, I think. Like, it's just easy, so easy to believe it. And I think it's a symptom of the times, a manifestation of the chronic disease that has infected our culture. And we revere and hold this narcissist in high esteem, and we applaud them heartily, like, yay, for being ruthless and merciless, master of their domain and captains of industry and champions of finance and rulers of government. We're like, yeah, you go. Get it? Yeah, that's the way to defeat everybody and climb to the top. Just step on every poor sucker you can on the way up. It doesn't matter. They're collateral damage. All that matters is winning. Isn't that kind of what the belief system is these days? That's the message that we're putting out there, that we value. Is just, you know, these weak, poor suckers with bleeding hearts are useless. That's what we tell ourselves and others. We must learn to take the other guy out before he does it to us. That's kind of criminal mentality, gangbanger mentality. You know, shoot them before they shoot you, because they're going to. It's just a matter of time. So take them out so that you'll be safer. Do whatever unethical thing that you need to do that's out of boundaries or whatever that you need to do, because the means justify the ends. Isn't that the bottom line of what we're preaching these days? Isn't that the best advice that's coming out? And I'm being sarcastic. It is not the best advice, obviously. It is toxic, horrible advice. But I think that it's popular these days. Have you ever sat in your car at a light and felt like you were moving backwards because the other cars had started to move forward? Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like, oh my gosh, do I have my foot on the brake? What's happening here? I think that is what's happening to all of us right now. We think we're moving and, like, we're not. We're stuck. We're not moving at all. We're not going anywhere. You just think you're moving. So I think we're stuck with an ideology that is going to kill us and destroy everything that should matter. Am I sounding a little too preachy and judgmental? Oh, woe is me. And heaven forbid that I accidentally step on a politically self-righteous toe or two as I try to warn you. My intention is not to offend, but rather to awaken. And it's a different kind of being awakened. Older women like me tend to speak truth without fear. I mean, what do we have to lose, right? When you're my age, what do you have to lose? Most of my life's in the rearview mirror. What are they going to do to me? Especially those of us who have come out of a long relationship with a mentally sick and abusive partner, emotionally abusive mostly. They don't have to hit you and give you bruises and cuts to be abusive. There's ambient abuse, and sometimes that silent, invisible abuse, that emotional abuse, is just, it's, you know, you get over a bruise or a cut a little bit faster, I think. You know, all of it's bad. All of it is inexcusable, but do not discount or minimize or diminish the traumatic power of the ambient abuse. So what do I want to tell you? Do I have a solution for any of this? Nope, I don't, but I have ideas. And so, I think we have to stop demanding and start deserving. Let's make that your bumper sticker mantra for the week. We have to stop demanding and start deserving. Yeah, I'm done with all the entitlement, you know. I think we have to start serving others and stop serving ourselves. Ooh, how about that? Okay, so here I'm going to give you some things. Jot this down. Take notes, students. Here we go. I think we have to start serving others and stop serving ourselves. I think we need to talk less and do more. I think we must come together and stop moving apart and being polarized and divisive and having, you know, so much violence and hatred among ourselves when we need to be helping each other. I think we're all in this together, all of us, and that everybody, and there shouldn't be an us and a them. There should only be a we. That's what I think. I think it's time to shut up and grow up. We've been playing too hard for too long and neglecting our necessary chores, boys and girls and others. We smirk arrogantly at each other's dirty faces and tousled hair. Some of us are injured, bleeding, but we just keep playing, playing hard, no matter who gets hurt or who falls down. We're sweaty, stubborn, stinky, and nobody can tell us a damn thing. Petulant. You know what? Petulant. It fits into what we're saying here. Childish, selfish, children. That's what we are in a world where the responsible, accountable grown-ups, they've left the party. I don't know what happened to them. Where are they? Are they like in their safe room, hiding out in their basement? Where are those people? So we need to stop. Stand still. Look at what we've done and the mess we've created. Never taking responsibility for the harm that we've caused. Never assessing the damage. We just want to have more fun, more play, more excitement, more, 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 always more. Maybe it's time to stop. And maybe it's time to go home and return to ourselves and what we know, or at least we used to know, what was right and what was wrong, even if doing the right thing is hard and no fun. Okay, so that's a lot. I just want to say, I think many of the things I've talked about in this podcast are systemic problems that have become endemic problems. And I want to say that narcissism and ASPD, antisocial personality disorder, and psychopathy, psychopaths, all that. I think that these are the byproducts of what we're doing, how we're living, and what we prioritize, and how we're moving through life is going the wrong way, guys, in so many ways, so many ways. And if we don't get ourselves together, you know, how's it going to get better? What's going to happen? You know, I have students. I'm still in the classroom all day, and I have high school students. A lot of them are depressed, sad, scared, frustrated, just resigned to being defeated and having their lives, you know, their choices being taken away before they even get old enough to have choices, really. And it's a horrible time to be in high school, to be that age, and to be looking to the future at all of the problems and see how nobody's doing anything to fix them. Little small efforts here and there, like little tiny fires popping up, but no big, grand, concerted effort where everybody pulls together and rows in the same direction. What the hell? You know, without that kind of action, what do you think's going to happen in the coming years? And maybe it's a hard lesson to get people to slam on the brakes and to rethink some of the bullshit that they're promoting right now. And, you know, I think anything's possible. I'm pretty sure some of these young people think this is the apocalypse and the wars that are happening are Armageddon and the beginning of the end and these are the end times. And there's plenty of people who believe that right now. But, you know, what if, okay, so maybe it is. I'm not going to say it's not. What if it is? Okay, but what if it's not? What's your plan then? And I tell you what, if I thought this were if I thought, subjunctive mood, if I thought this were the end times, I guarantee you I would be spending all of my energy trying to get my spiritual house in order and stop worrying about how I'm going to have pleasure and fun and friskiness out there in the world, you know, and you know, serve myself and be my best self and, you know, whatever. I wouldn't be thinking about that. I would be thinking, wow, I need to really get myself together, get my priorities in line and be ready for the end. And if it's not the end, and you know, very well may not be, this, you know, could just be going on for centuries more. We don't know. I mean, how long can things last with dead seas and poison air and no food and no water, right? And that's the kind of future we're leaving to the children of today because we can't get our head out of our backside and work together to find solutions to these problems. Last thing I want to tell you, and I want to share this. Stanford University did a study a couple of years back, I think, and it's and they tried to figure out an actual viable plan to save the world, to save the planet, to save the people on it. 8.5 billion people live on this planet, and the planet's dying. It's like an extinction level event. What can be done to stop that and turn it around? Which I also agree, it's possible. It's possible. We can do it. And they made a plan. It's actually doable, a doable, viable, real plan that would require a complete redistribution of wealth and a complete revamping of every single thing that we now are doing and knowing. And it would cost money that we could never come up with the way things are currently structured. It would have to just be a complete burn everything to the ground and start over with this complete new system. And yes, it would be everything is it's not past the tipping point. Was that Malcolm Gladwell who wrote that book, The Tipping Point? It doesn't have to be past that at this point, past the point of no return. It's still salvageable. But I started thinking, is that going to happen? Do I see people working together every day? It seems like I look around and narcissists, psychopaths, and some weird hybrids of that, antisocials or whatever, they're running things. They're the people in power. Not all of the time, but enough of the time to make all the difference. And we're like, yay, they know how to win. Let's support those people. It's crazy. Yeah. So that's my words and my warnings. We live in a world where narcissism and all of that is growing, and maybe they're the new adaptation, and they're going to rule everything, and the whole world will be like that, and we're all just going to be dead inside with no ethics or empathy or anything, no love, no virtue, no none of those things. It would all just be gone, and we'll all just be like that. Yeah, terrible thought. So anyway, that's my 2 cents worth. Think about what can we do? What can we do to get the word out, to wake people up, to get them to start thinking about how we're going to survive in the coming days, which may get a little bumpy, folks. Yeah, folks, it's going to get bumpy. I do believe it's going to. It ha you know, things are definitely going a specific direction, and they're definitely going the wrong direction about 90% of it, I think. And so we just, I don't know what it's going to take to turn things around, but it's definitely something for you to think about and to talk about and share these ideas with the people that you know and get them to thinking. And try to get them to reassess their priorities and their values and to be reflective, self-reflective about the condition of their own souls and relationships and all of that. Okay, that's it. I told you this was going to go long. 45 minutes. Oh my gosh. Season 9. Snaps for Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators. 250 episodes, 9 seasons starting now, season number 9. I'm gonna keep going. I'm gonna ride this thing until the wheels fall off, till the world ends, till I end, whatever comes first. I'm gonna keep it going because it's important. It's important to talk about what's happening. It's important to know the truth, to know the truth. So go forward and dispense that truth. Love yourself, love each other, and let's try to be good. That's I think that's important to want to be good and to care about other people and have empathy, and that's what makes us not narcissists, right? So yeah, to genuinely have empathy for the suffering of others and to want to ameliorate that pain. Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. So let's go do that. Okay, talk to you soon. Much love. Bye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.